Hey, Eric.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm just basking in the glow of last week.
What happened last week?
Last week, Jeff, on Thursday, we had the Yolono tour, You Only Live One Night Only. It was a tour because we had two shows in one night. And we brought out people like Bun B and Smoke Dizza and Joelle Ortiz and DJ Clark Kent and Miss Info and Bridget Kelly and Teray and MC Jin to perform with us on stage. It was a crazy night.
Oh, right. I guess I was there.
Yeah, you were definitely on stage with me. I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. I'm trying to think what happened because football season's only just begun, but it already feels like the playoffs at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where millionaires are being crowned all season long.
Jeff, one-week fantasy at DraftKings means no season-long commitments, and that is awesome for Cowboys fans because RIP Tony Romo.
Yes, it's fantasy football on demand. Play where you want, when you want, with the players you want. Name your team what you want. You could name it Tony Nomo.
You could. And with $1 million up for grabs every week, every game is the big game and every play matters.
So first and 10 in the first quarter feels like fourth and goal with 1 second left?
That's right. And a long touchdown run could mean more than just a victory for your favorite team. It could mean you've turned your love of football into $1 million payday.
This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time.
Listen, hurry to DraftKings.com right now and use the promo code REAL, R-E-A-L, to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event.
Right, that is the promo code, not the Romo code. Enter REAL for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com, that's DraftKings.com.
Yo, what up, it's Eric, a.k.a. Trap Star Wars, a.k.a. Bando Calrissian.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. DMX Wing, a.k.a. Rider Jedi.
What? Yo, what up, it's Phil, a.k.a. BJ Pronto, a.k.a. Skype Jones, a.k.a. Slim Leg Chino, a.k.a. Rembert Brown, a.k.a. Personal Brand, a.k.a. Helmet Chang, a.k.a. David Cho's Tom Brown Budget.
Wow.
A.k.a. Shut the Fuck Up, I'm on a podcast with Just Blaze.
Wow.
This is Just Blaze, and I didn't get the memo that I needed a.k.a., but I'm here.
And this is a waste of time with this, the real. First of all, for anyone expecting this to be a really cool podcast,
it's not.
It's not it. Also, if you've been tuning in for the first like 14 weeks of this and you thought it was going to be a cool podcast, again, not it.
No.
But we're thrilled to have two of our friends here who know a ton about Star Wars because we're two people who know zero about it.
Right. We've never seen it.
We have never seen it.
We've seen Spaceballs a bunch.
Seen Spaceballs. Have no interest, really, in Star Wars.
You guys take pride in the fact that you've never seen it?
Oh, we're allowed to talk.
At a certain point, yeah. Well, at a certain point, I think it's just like you get used to something, and it's like, that's...
And by the way, we're not the only ones that have not seen Star Wars.
There's a silent majority.
Yeah. I know one or two other people who haven't seen it. They are, like, literally, I probably know one or two people.
And they're as scared as you guys are.
I'm not scared.
You're scared. Like, I wonder, like, you know, there's some people who don't, like, have TV. Like, I don't watch TV.
Yeah, it's like...
Are you those guys that, like, I've never seen Star Wars? I'm proud of it.
No. It's just never been an interest.
Right. Like, generally, I don't know if you know this, Just, but they generally refuse to watch anything that's not, like, rooted in reality.
Gotcha.
So, well,
Star Wars is real?
For me, it feels like it's just a fear of, like, a metaphor extending past, like, one removed layer of reality for you guys.
Gotcha. I think, someone was asking, like, well, how do you feel about, like, say Batman, and I like Batman. I'm not going to see Superman. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to see like Iron Man. But like Batman's a human. He does human things. Like I get that. Like I'm with that.
He's a rich ninja.
He is.
And then like you know like
that's real.
We can like Jurassic Park,
sure.
But we just won't fuck with Game of Thrones.
Wait, how can you like Batman being a rich ninja is a possible thing? Like he has ninja training.
Mm-hmm.
And has billions of dollars at his disposal to create these weapons.
Mm-hmm.
The technology does not exist right now to actually regenerate dinosaurs.
Well, I read in science books that it's just humans really and dinosaurs lived at the same time. Jesus was born and rode a dinosaur horse.
Well, all right.
Anyway, we should say...
It's such a subjective line just to like piss people off. Is what it comes down to.
No, that's not the purpose of it.
Yeah, I think it's just like it's whatever interests me.
You just like upsetting us.
Let's just say we have super producer Just Blaze here. We have our former neighbor Phil Chang here. Both of you guys know and love. And is it fair to say you obsess over Star Wars?
It's funny. I actually just thought of this as I was getting out of the car. I think I'm the kind of person that when I like something or when I'm into something, I like to know. I like it's in my nature to research it and know a lot.
You're a completist.
About it. Yeah, you know, like I was, you know, I've taken up road biking fairly recently, and you know, a friend of mine was asking me some questions, so I'm just answering her questions. She's like, "Oh my God, you're so obsessed!" I'm like, "No, this is something that I'm doing. I'm doing it because I enjoy it. It has health benefits, and it's an expensive hobby, so I had to do my research to know what I'm buying into."
Sure.
So I think with this, it's kind of the same thing. It's something that I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of my father was a sci-fi guy, so it kind of got passed on to me by default. And the books are all around the house because my pop used to read them. You know?
And so, but it was a movie first, right?
Right.
And then it became a book?
Well, no, there's always the novels that come the adaptations that come out with the books.
Yeah.
And then there were the comic books, and I used to read comic books as well. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I always had different resources where I could learn about the mythology.
So, to break it, there's a canon, right? Like, that's the films.
Okay.
And anything that, like, comes out with, like, George Lucas's, like, cosign or someone, like, high up at LucasArts or whatever, now it's got to be Disney because that's who owns it.
Well, right. That's the thing. So they had what's called the Expanded Universe.
Right.
So you had the first three movies.
Okay.
Right.
And then after that, they started coming out with novels. And Marvel, you remember Marvel, which is funny because now Marvel is owned by Disney, but Marvel used to publish Star Wars books. They did the official comic books of the movies.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, they started doing expanded stories. So that led to expanded novels and graphic novels. So there was this whole universe that was kind of created after the movies had come and gone.
And you're with all that.
And
it depends on who you are.
Yeah.
Like, it depends on, like some people are, like, all about the entire expanded universe, which has gone, like, totally off the rails over the years.
Yeah.
Other people are, like...
Wait, why has it gone totally off the rails?
It's just in, like, a weird different... Like, you let go of a franchise for that long and let people, like, run it without any kind of oversight. Like, it just... It goes to the, like, the real, real, real deep fanboys, and it just turns into a thing that, like...
I mean, there are books about what happened 50,000 years before Return of the... Or before the first Star Wars,
right,
where it's, like... You know, how the Jedi got their name, where it used to be the Jedi, like J-E-D apostrophe A-I-I. And it just goes way, it goes to a certain point where you're just like, all right, unless it's really good story writing and creative writing, I can't, like, I'm not that into it, where I want to know everything that was considered canon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But there are certain books from the expanded universe, like Splinter of the Mind's Eye,
yep,
Dark Empire, things
like
that.
The Thrawn Trilogy.
Yeah, the Thrawn Trilogy. Well, those were just well-written stories that happened to exist within the Star Wars.
And it's like well-regarded, like, I know you guys don't give a shit, but, like, well-regarded writers in the fantasy sci-fi space who weren't, like, you know, like, Star Wars employees or whatever, or stakeholders.
Right.
But they just happened to appreciate, you know, what the, like, the contributions of the films to, like, you know, the rest of the genre.
All right. Before we get too far, can you guys each please try to explain to us Star Wars... The first movie, so which is the fourth movie,
mm-hmm,
A New Hope,
in 30 seconds. Is that possible?
Yeah.
You want to go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like an aimless farmhand gets taken off the planet by a crazy dude and gets sent on a quest to save the galaxy.
Pretty much it.
Fairly accurate.
And finds out some interesting things along the way about his family connection to what maybe... To his larger
purpose.
Picture of what's happening in the galaxy.
Okay,
are there any funny workplace antics?
Yeah, if you looked at it from, like, the perspective of, like, you know, like, anyone who worked at the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Yeah.
You just have to look at it from, like, outside. Like, you have to look at, like, the peripheral vision of, like, what's happening in a shot, right? Like, if you look at what's happening from the perspective of any character who's, like, seemingly a bystander or, like, a practical effect...
Mm-hmm.
For the larger sake of the narrative, that's actually, it's funny to, and it loops back to what we were talking about, expanded universe stuff.
Right.
That's where it started to get interesting for people. Like, let's think about, like, what this random dude who gets shot by, like, an errant laser was doing, like, the day before.
The day before that happened, you know, or, like, even, like, that's kind of, like, how, like, we're fast-forwarding a little bit. You take a character like Boba Fett,
mm-hmm,
who really only had... total between the three movies. Well, it wasn't even in the first movie.
Boba Fett is the galaxy's most notorious bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've definitely seen what he looks like.
Green helmet, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And
I draw him a lot.
Okay.
Well, I think that's, like, what people don't understand, like, not to get too far off track, like, with this, but, like, that Star Wars is so, like, omnipresent in society that, like, everything sort of seeps into it. And so it's almost like I have seen it, but without actually seeing it.
Right.
The thing I was going to say about Boba Fett.
That doesn't excuse anything, by the way.
He was a relatively minor character who ended up becoming one of the most popular. And he's probably got a total of half an hour's worth of screen time between all the movies.
Yep.
Between the original trilogy,
mm-hmm.
but became one of the most is now one of the most popular and recognizable characters,
and indirectly in the newer trilogy,
exactly because in the newer trilogy they wrote him in as a kid, and on top of that, it turns out that like all the original stormtroopers, all hundreds of thousands of them, were actually his brothers because they're all clones of his father, so they took somebody who was kind of a side character. And made them, they became so popular in the years after the original movies that he's now an integral part of the story overall.
Okay. Where does Star Wars resonate with you today? Is it the same as when you first saw it?
I mean, for me, I can, you know, I've seen it so many times. It's kind of just part of my vocabulary almost to a certain degree. But I can definitely attribute, somebody asked me a question about John Williams the other day.
Mm-hmm.
This is for an interview, and I realized that like part of the reason why I have a very grandiose, epic sound to my music is due in part, due in part to John Williams.
Hmm.
I grew up watching these movies all the time.
Yes.
And watching how his music could evoke the emotion that was on screen, whether it was sadness or intense action or a strong emotion, but it was always big and grand sounding. And as a kid, one of my first musical thoughts was, I want to make music for a Star Wars movie. And I'm going back to when I was like 7 or 8 years old.
Absolutely.
And I'm only realizing now why part of the reason why everything with me is so big and loud and uplifting, I guess, is really from that influence.
Hmm.
So am I a proponent of classical music or classical movie scores? No, but the energy that came from that score was definitely one of the biggest influences on me that I did not realize until my adult life.
I think that's a great point because I'm certainly not a proponent of classical music, nor am I like well versed in it. But when you watch those opening title credits,
yes,
especially as a kid, who's like, you know, if your imagination's pretty active, it's an emotional thing. It's like a very emotionally resonant thing, and you don't have the faculties to like kind of process why.
Right.
But it's like such a visceral thing that you're like, holy shit, I'm already in this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in.
You mean watching like the tractor beam go back?
Yeah, like when you first hear that, after the 20th Century Fox fanfare,
the horns come in.
And it's just like this crawling monologue, and you're just like, yo, whatever this is, it's about to be.
What the fuck is happening?
It's about to be something.
What the fuck? To be fair, I felt the same way about like the opening song.
Malibu's Most Wanted.
No. In like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. So I'm like, I'm just impressionable.
Wait, but the thing is you hit the nail on the head in terms of being impressionable. When you're watching that as a kid, you kind of have that clean slate.
Yeah.
It's much different from, say, somebody who was 30 years old.
Right.
Grew up maybe watching Flash Gordon serials.
That's what I'm talking about. These dudes are scared. Closed off imaginations.
It's a rabbit hole, man.
Adulthood has ruined them.
Okay.
Down a rabbit hole.
So was the technology anything like, okay, back then, was it impressive, what you were watching?
It was life-changing.
Are you kidding me?
It's life-changing.
The practical, like, ILM. Yeah, even the effects studios and, like, the sound design. You have a lot to weigh in on this, I'm sure. And I actually wanted to ask you, have you ever sampled like the Imperial March? I feel like
I have, and I got a huge check for it until I realized they would never be able to clear it.
Right.
But I have, actually. You got to think about it. Up until that point, you had never seen anything that looked like that and actually looked real. You know, like, and if there's a reason why you can watch the original trilogy and certain things from there look more realistic.
Yep.
Than things in the later trilogy or those special editions.
Yep.
Because everything was actually real.
Yep.
Like tangible.
Yeah, yeah.
It
right,
wasn't
yeah.
CGI. It wasn't
You're building
acting,
miniatures.
Like, yeah. They're building miniatures. They have miniature cameras that are, or they have, like, in some cases, like an actual life size X Wing, you know, or it's not just somebody
crawling. For the Dagobah scene.
Yeah. You know, like, it's so there's a different, like, nobody had filmed things like that.
Right.
And that man, actually, I shouldn't say nobody had done it. Nobody had done it to that scale.
Yeah.
Okay.
Previously.
Yeah. It set the precedent. And again, it's like, you read all, like, for me, like, the access point was actually trying to figure out, like, how the fuck they did all that. So I'd buy a lot of books that were about like the behind the scenes and the process of. Mm-hmm. And that's when it gets rooted to reality, right? It's like, holy shit, the inventiveness of these people who didn't have like the most massive budget
at all,
pulling this off. Like we talk about Boba Fett, like he has a spaceship and you look at it and you're like, that looks like something very familiar to me. And it turns out it was just randomly like a fucking, like the head of a street lamp that they totally converted to into this scale model
miniature
of a spaceship.
Yeah.
And that it was like inventing out of the limitations and parameters you had available.
Which kind of relates to what we do with music, especially
exactly,
the early days
exactly,
of hip hop.
Exactly.
Like, we couldn't afford musicians and bands and things like that, so we took other people's music and found ways of repeating the breaks on turntables.
Right.
You know, and later on with samplers and things like that, learning to do a lot with very little.
Right.
And the sound design is an even more literal connection because, like, when you think about like the effects for like blasters and stuff, how they achieved that, it's like, you know, like literally like twanging string against something and like looping it back on tape.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly like an analog for how early hip hop
or how produced. They made Justin Bieber's new song "Where Are You Now?" Where they said that Justin Bieber goes, "Those are very expensive sounds because you have to, like, you know, Foley."
I have no idea of any of this. Like, is this a joke? Or
no, there was a thing. There was a big New York Times video piece that came out yesterday where Diplo and Skrillex and Justin Bieber are interviewed on how they built this song out of, like, his voice.
Oh, on the Jackie record.
It's
Gotcha.
I have to imagine, like, sampling sessions with Diplo and Skrillex get really weird.
Yo, Skrillex is amazing. Like, you know, we're cool, we're homies. And
seen Star Wars?
I don't know. This is totally unrelated, but, like, I was just at his house one night just hanging out. And he's like, hey, let's make a song. And I'm like, all right, fine. So I work with current technology, but my approach is still old school. I still need an actual keyboard to play or some drum pads to hit. So I'm like, where's your keyboard? He's like, oh, there's one in the corner. I'm like, but you're not going to hook it up.
It's in the box.
Yeah, like, and this guy, like, I just sat there with him. It's like 3 a.m. And he's just drawing music. Like, he's literally just sitting there with his mouse, drawing it. And
it's like a Minority Report interface.
It was like Tom Cruise manipulating the Minority Report computer. And he's like, and I'm listening. And as he's doing it, not that I didn't respect him before.
Yeah.
But I'm a very touch and feel kind of guy when it comes to making my music. I need to feel what I'm doing.
Sure, right.
Not that my method is better, it's just different.
Yeah.
Right.
But he literally just drew an entire song out and barely had to listen to it or audition it as he was doing it. He was just sketching the song with a mouse and then hit play 30 minutes later and I'm like, dude, you listened to like 3 things. He is a Jedi.
So he's drawing like MIDI stuff. Okay,
but he's also taking MIDI or taking audio and manipulating it. Like, he'll take a generic bass sound, but while not listening, just start programming filters and VCAs and VCFs and envelopes. So in his head, he can hear in his head what he's doing to this sample without ever actually having to listen.
That's some Jedi shit.
You know, it really is. It really is. At one point, I was expecting him to turn to the side and be like, this is not the track you're listening to.
Yeah. You are not even here.
Yeah, you're not even here. This is all a dream. Shout out to Skrillex.
So you go see it in the theater for the first time, or you saw it on home?
So here's an interesting thing, and this is probably another reason why my mind lends to Star Wars or to the universe in general. My very first Star Wars came out when I was 4 months old. My only memory. You only say you're
going to say your only regret.
Well, no, like, you know, most people, they don't remember anything from when you're a baby. So
right.
They say
sometimes
you remember images or glimpses. The one thing that I remember as a baby is my parents going to a drive-in and watching Star Wars. And the only thing that I remember is when Vader spins off at the very end.
Whoa.
But, like, I remember, like, years later, maybe, like, within the last 5 years, I asked my mom, I'm like, Mom, did we go see Star Wars when I was a baby in a drive-in theater in a brown Firebird?
Holy shit.
Whoa. And she's like, how do you even know that? Like, was there a picture? And I'm like, no, I remember. So I'm like, I distinctly remember us being in a brown car. You know, I guess in drive-ins, they used to put the speaker in the car, dangle it into the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I remember a speaker, like a gray speaker dangling in a car and me looking up and seeing Darth Vader spinning away into space.
Wow.
And she's like, you remember that? I'm like, that's all I remember. But I remember that. So my first time, I saw that as a baby.
Yeah.
4 or 5 months old. Didn't see Empire, but my father had gone to see it. And he, you know, back in the days, I guess when you used to go to movies for really big events, they would sell like programs. Like when you go to a Broadway play, they have the playbill.
Yeah, right.
They used to do that for movies back in the day.
Huh.
So my father had this, like, it had to be at least 50-page one from Empire Strikes Back.
Crazy.
So I used to read that all the time as a kid. And then when Jedi came out, my father took me, my brother, my sister to go see that. So that was the first one I saw in the movies. The funny thing is my babysitter at the time had like the storybook adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the movie quoting what was happening before.
Fucking awesome.
Before it was happening.
I did that with Lion King.
And my mother's like, how do you know this? And I'm like, oh, Kendall has the book. So I kind of knew the whole movie already.
That sounds some like Rocky Horror Picture shit. Like yeah, where people yeah. are shouting at the
Which
thing.
I never understood.
Like, me neither.
No.
Some guys that I went to high school with were into Rocky Horror. Or actually was one guy. And he was like,
it all it takes is one.
Yeah.
All it takes is one.
He was the heavy metal dude slash like Dungeons and Dragons nerd.
Yeah.
And he
right,
to,
totally different than Star Wars.
And yeah. he used to invite me every weekend, like, yo, we're doing Rocky Horror. And I guess what they would do is they play the movie and then act it out.
It's so involved, those yeah. dudes.
But Star Wars fans do this too, right?
That's actually just happened recently. I think within the last year or two.
Oh, really?
I forget what the name of the theater is, but somebody's done that recently.
Have either of you guys ever dressed up as any Star Wars characters for anything? Halloween or on other days?
I'll let you talk about this one first. I have some things to say about that.
I mean, Star Wars, I just, for me, like, it was one of those things I felt like if I couldn't achieve the production value, I didn't even want to try.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, there are other things.
So you went full out.
Yes.
So thousands point of
being,
dollars.
Point being, you're never invited over. Yeah. No, I actually never dressed up as a Star Wars character to my knowledge because I just didn't feel like I could live up to the, like for me again, like the.
What's the biggest production that you've put into like a costume?
See, for me, Halloween is a struggle every year because I'll like, you know, I'll get to November, mm-hmm. right? Like reboot after Halloween. I'm like, next year for sure. And then I'm thinking of elaborate costumes, and I'm like looking up like the Ghostbuster Proton
right,
packs on
right.
eBay. I'm like, this year I'm buying it.
Right.
And it's going to have the sound effects.
Right.
And some nerd in London who like works at some like Peter Jackson like whatever thing is
right.
going to have like built it on his free time.
Right.
And I'm all in. And then like, I don't know, like my spending habits get the better of me, and then we like it's like September again, and I'm like scrambling.
I was
going
to say,
like,
all of a sudden
oh,
you're right back where you left.
Exactly. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, for me, I've never dressed up with the intention of going out dressed up.
So it's strictly a private thing.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
so what happened was, and you know, there was this whole thing where all of a sudden, you know, there was like this big, huge thing on the internet where all of a sudden it was like, Just Blaze is a super nerd, and there's a, that's the general consensus now. I can tell you exactly where that started from. So my birthday is January 8th.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what year it was, but I get a call from Jay
mm-hmm.
saying, I need to have a meeting with you. Super important. I need you to meet me at 4040 around 8 o'clock.
I have a story just like this after, so get ready for that one.
So I'm like, all right. And then I started to say, well, it's my birthday. But then I'm like, I don't have anything else to do. It's my birthday. Whatever. I want to go have a meeting with Jay.
Yeah.
I guess this had to have been 2004, baby.
Okay.
So, because he had done the whole retirement thing. So I get to 4040, and I know everybody there. Security, obviously, you know, all the managers, whatever. And they're just kind of looking at me like, you know, not letting me in behind the velvet rope. And I'm like, what's up?
Yeah.
And they're like, you waiting for somebody? And I'm like, dude, it's me. I just saw you like 2 days ago. And they're like, all right, so you're supposed to be somebody famous? Uh-huh. And I'm like, but... So now I'm getting upset. So I go to text Jay and OG Wong.
Yeah.
And I'm out there for like 5 minutes. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, no sneakers. And I'm like, but it's... That's when I get my phone and I text Jay and Wong.
Yeah.
So anyway, Jay comes to the front door. He's like, oh, yo, my bad. We had an incident last night, and I told him to be extra with the security. I'm like, all right. So he's like, I'm going to talk to you about this new project I'm working on. So we go to walk in the club. He's like, but first, let me show you the new addition.
Because
they had just did a different wing on the club. So he takes me, and we make a left. And there's 100 Darth Vaders and like 100 Princess Leias.
Oh my God.
And my staff at the time are all dressed like in the, like, everybody had all the basic stuff, but then like my staff had like my engineer Andy had on the full on real velvet suit. Tariq, who used to be my manager's assistant, had like the $2,000 Chewbacca costume on.
Wow.
My manager had the Amidala outfit, which I found out later on she had spent like $3,000 on.
Oh my God.
So all the key people had like real deal costumes, and then anybody else who came had like the regular plastic ones. But all the girls had to wear Leia buns.
Wow.
And, like, and at first it's all masks.
But there were no slave Leia suits?
No slave Leia suits. But like, and then people are taking off their masks, and it's like Large Professor wearing a Darth Vader mask.
Wow.
Like, how'd you even know to find, you know, it's like that moment where you're like, they're having a Star Wars surprise party for me in the 4040 Club with like the place decked out like the Death Star and the movies playing on all the screens. And it was something that it's something silly that you might do with your friends and your family. But this one engineer that I used to work with, for whatever reason, puts it on his blog. And he had a fairly popular music blog at the time. So this was in the very early days of blogging. So for whatever reason, the way it read was, I threw myself a Star Wars
exactly
costume
right.
party.
Wow.
And this is back like in the early days of the forums, like All Hip Hop and SOH.
Yeah, sure.
So it went viral on all those forums. And that's when the whole public perception of my persona changed.
And then this is also around the time like LRG is starting to
hit,
right? So that certainly contributes to it.
Yeah.
And then you had like the Vibe column.
Right, well, the Double XL.
Or Double XL.
Well, but also, I mean, let's not forget.
The moral of the story, by the way, is that I have no friends.
Well, actually, I think the moral of the story is one.
Oh, wait, before the one thing. So they maybe put on, like, a Darth Vader mask, but they bought, like, the real deal, like, replica.
Oh, my God.
So I put it on to take some pictures, and then eventually I took the faceplate off. It was hot. I mean, somebody happened to snap a picture of me still having the helmet part on.
Oh wow.
And it ended up online, and that was the end.
It's
okay,
a wrap.
Two things. Wow. One is, that's an awesome, like, okay, it's themed, it's Star Wars, whatever, right. So it doesn't, like, mean, like, a whole lot to me, but for you,
right.
That Jay did that, or that Jay
had
some
involved,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
number
it was cool. It was like, wow, he actually was in on my surprise birthday party.
And number two, do you think he felt bad for the Fade to Black thing?
When he went in. I to this day, I told him, like, I never watched that movie.
No, but and we talked about this on our last podcast.
That was so, like, dude. First, and I know we talked about this already. Every time it comes up, it grates my nerves. More so, not so much because of the way that they've chopped up and edited the whole video game buying habit thing.
Right.
Because they admitted afterwards, like, yo, we had to make it dramatic.
Right.
So you just ended up being the butt of the joke. I'm fine with that. It was more so the fact that right after that, they had me playing some really whack music to Jay.
Which wasn't yours.
Which wasn't my music.
Yeah.
They brought in some other guy to replay all the stuff that had samples. And instead of giving me the chance to properly represent myself, they just had some whack nonsense playing. But it made me look like, oh, so this guy went and spent all his money buying video games. And then played Jay some BS.
And now he's not focused on his shit.
And now he's not focused. And then a year later, I'm having Star Wars parties. and Jay's escorting me into them. It's a really interesting time in my life.
Who are the biggest Star Wars fans in the rap world that we'd be surprised about? Like, do you have conversations?
Rook from Justice League has a huge diamond Han Solo and carbonite chain.
God damn.
Yeah.
Is it, like, flooded?
Yes. Think about that big.
What the fuck?
Yes. I want to say Ross has something in his house, but I can't remember where it is.
Ross definitely has a line that says, Luke Skywalker was my motherfucking idol. Back in middle school, I watched the videos and get excited.
Wow.
Yeah.
He has something. Like, when he came, one of the times came to studio, he told me about something that he had, but I can't remember what it was. Because I used to have an insignia of the Rebel Alliance on one of the doors.
Yeah.
It was like a stamp. And he recognized it. And he was like, yo, I have such and such in my house from Star Wars, but I can't remember what it was.
You had the Alliance insignia or the Empire?
Actually, I had both. One door had the Alliance. It was like a wall. It was like all the doors had 80s themed stuff.
Oh, my God.
So one had the Cobra symbol. One had the Rebel Alliance. One had the Empire. One had Thundercats. Every door had a different 80s themed thing. You know, the label Stone's Throw.
Sure,
yeah.
The guy that used to run that, along with Peanut Butter Wolf, Egon.
Mm-hmm.
Egon and I went to see Revenge of the Sith. He went full on with as Boba Fett.
So now we're entering another realm of art that, like, it's the real does not get behind.
Right.
Which is, you know, proverbial backpack rap.
Right.
Ross, which Ross, I'm a huge fan. I get a lot of shit because Slug is one of my top five MCs.
Right.
And these dudes just cannot stand for that.
I you know I don't think I've actually heard a Slug record. No, they used to work with Atmosphere, right?
Slug is one, Slug is formerly one third, one half of Atmosphere.
Yeah, all right, cool.
Ant is the producer, and then they used to have Spawn in the group as well.
Right.
You are fighting on your own now.
Yeah, though. Atmosphere isn't one person.
It's been a fight that I've been fighting with you guys for years.
I'm thinking of Apathy, actually. I'm getting Apathy.
Demigods, dudes.
Yeah, I'm getting Apathy and Atmosphere confused, but I've for whatever reason thought Atmosphere was one person.
Well, yeah, because it's one dude rapping.
Gotcha. That's probably where I was
thinking.
Yeah,
Slug is the
rapper. Well, speaking of white rappers, Eminem is also a big Star Wars fan.
Is that right?
Yeah, he devoted like a whole verse to like saying stuff about Padawans and
like in the Ruckus days or like
no,
recently?
It was on like Slim Shady LP or something. Or,
really,
really,
it's one of, like, yeah. one of like the first two or three
or
albums.
Marshall Mathers LP. Yeah.
Did that yeah. that never came up when you were working together?
No, we discussed comic books, but Star Wars never came up.
Gotcha.
What comic books is he into?
Dude, so his whole thing is he likes to collect number ones.
Oh.
And, I mean, it's obviously Eminem. His financial resources are virtually endless.
Yeah.
Sure.
But he still kind of carries himself. He doesn't carry himself that way.
Yeah.
At all. Like, when he makes a big purchase, he still, like, checks with his people.
I mean, he still general releases Air Maxes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, like, he doesn't really go crazy when it comes to spending money on things, to my knowledge, in my short period of time that I spent hanging out with him. But we got, you know, once we actually got kind of cool and friendly, somehow comic books came up. And he came to the studio the next day. He's like, yo, I got something for you. And he tosses me a bag. And it's literally any and every significant number one you could think of. I mean, he even had the propaganda, the first Captain America, where he's knocking
out
World
War II stuff.
Yeah, where he's knocking out Hitler on the cover. Like, untouched, unopened.
That's wow. like Smithsonian level
exactly.
artifacts.
He has that just hanging out. Like, he just when he gave me, he's literally. Just
what do you mean? It came in a bag.
He brought a bag with like all.
Is it like a nice like a? It's like a.
No, it's like a plastic
designer bag.
Why did plastic bag?
Why did he throw it at you?
Yeah,
I think it was casual. I'm like, hey, check these out. You might like these.
But wait, yeah, but you can't come at someone being like, I got something for you, yeah. and then throw them that. It's like, what? I get to keep these?
No, I think he was just like, check them out.
Yeah, he was like Nardwar.
Yeah, like, check this out. Just kind of tossed them to me. I'm like, oh my god. And it was like literally every number one that you would ever want to have.
Ah, fuck.
He just had them all, not binded up and boarded. No, just in plastic.
It was in the bag in plastic.
Yeah, in plastic sheets. Oh, I took them out. I'm like, I can't believe I'm actually flipping through the pages of a Captain America number one.
Wow.
Man.
And he kind of was like, you know, any one of us most normal people, or the average person, I shouldn't say normal, but the average person would probably be like, barely letting you touch it, much less leaving the room.
Hell right. no.
Dude, he was just like, yeah, cool, check this out. And then he's like, just leaves and goes play basketball. And I'm just sitting there with these in my hand. Like, granted, I'm in his house. I'm not going anywhere. But still, I'm like.
You should have replaced it with, like, I don't know, like a Maxim magazine.
Yeah,
and then,
like,
that.
Just, let me stuff this Playboy in there. This New Yorker will be here. Yeah, but, so yeah, that was probably the only nerd thing that we connected on was the comic book.
Is George Lucas a good director?
No.
No. That,
do you?
No.
Do you hold him in like great reverence because he created
Star
Wars? Because
it came out of his brain.
Yeah. Okay. Know. Oh no, I'm not joining in. I'm saying yes to you.
Yeah, it came out of his brain. So yeah. Of course you know like
because he only directed.
Increasingly, it's like a Nick Pizzolatto situation.
Okay.
Where it's like you have a great first season of True Detective,
right.
and you're like, what
right.
the fuck? And then season two is like some just overthought bullshit that no one understands.
Well, wait, did you guys have high hopes for episodes
one, two, and three? Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, I will. I don't want to say I will defend, but I.
You're an apologist.
No, not even that. One thing that a lot of people don't realize because it's not a well-known article, but there was an article that he did. Excuse me, I should say an interview that he did back in '83. Now, granted, this doesn't take away from the fact that he's a bad director, but there is an article where back in the sometime between Jedi and Empire, he was asked. Why did you start from episode 4? And at the time he said, listen, he said, it's not like I have the exact events as they unfold for all six movies already done in my head. I have the general overall arc.
Okay.
And I have some of the key moments for all six movies. However, I don't want to start at episode 1 because if I did, it would bore you all to death. Because I know that I want episode 1 to be the story of how Darth Vader starts out and the political climate. And he's like, I feel like that would probably be super boring.
Which, yeah, because he sucks as a director.
Right. Now, see, that somebody else could have taken episode 1 and made it
Better. Whatever happened between him and Irvin Kershner between Empire and Jedi is like...
Who's Irvin Kershner?
He's the director of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Okay.
So actually, I did like the 6 degrees of Just Blaze's shit.
Go on.
With Star Wars the other night.
Which is?
I mean, I know you're a big fan of like electronic music.
Right.
Like Exhibit J is something that I listen to on your SoundCloud a lot.
Oh, wow.
And that's like, I'm sure that's like not like something polished that you ever wanted to put out. Yeah. But... it got me thinking about, like, you know, the connections between, you know, rap production and electronic music and early techno and drum and bass and jungle. There's a really, I don't know if you know, I'm sure you probably do, there's a really elusive Detroit techno-inspired group called Drexia.
Yeah.
And Drexia's whole concept was, like, every album they put out was, like, the soundtrack to a hypothetical sci-fi film about an underwater nation of... unborn infants who were thrown off slave ships.
Oh, sure.
So it's really light stuff. But, you know, underwater society.
Right.
In the 90s, there was like a Star Wars, like, kind of a knockoff. I liked it, but it was a knockoff called Sequest.
I remember Sequest.
Which is about underwater utopias, and it's basically the next generation underwater.
Right.
And then...
Star Trek, different universe.
Different universe. And then who directed the pilot of Sequest was Irvin Kershner.
That I did not know.
Who did Empire Strikes Back. 6 degrees of Just Blaze of Star Wars.
Phil is sweating. His face is just like covered in sweat right now.
And he's just getting started.
I can leave now, right?
Yeah. He's just getting started.
Okay, so going into 1 through 3, was it because there was so much time between the first three and the real first three?
Why was there so much time between 4, 5, 6 and 1, 2, 3?
I honestly don't. I don't know the actual. I just think. Oh, you know what? His answer was always the way that he. Or when I say he, I mean,
right? The George technology Lucas, like wasn't
the technology right. wasn't there for him to make it the way he wanted to, and that's why when they did the special editions in the late '90s,
right?
Yeah,
for him that was kind of like a test to see how far he could push things with CGI in terms of accomplishing his vision, and when he felt like he did well with that.
Mm-hmm.
He felt like it was time. The technology had caught up to his imagination.
I think that feels like old, a bullshit excuse.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Everything, yeah, is. But I think there's like interviews with Irvin Kershner in like Vanity Fair from the 90s where they ask him like about that, like mm-hmm. the gap. And he was like, honestly, we were supposed to start in the late 80s, early 90s. And he's like, if we'd done that, I would have totally. It might have been about Jedi, I don't know. Or like the new prequels, but.
Right.
There was just a gap that was like attributed to technology not being there and all that stuff.
But you guys still went and saw them and of like course. Had high hopes.
Oh, the special editions? Yeah, I went and saw. You mean
sorry, the first three. Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, you know what? I went into it obviously super excited. It's like the movie event of my life in terms of episode one. Yeah.
Phantom Menace, you were excited.
Yeah, Phantom Menace, I was super excited.
Like based off of just waiting or the trailers?
Based off waiting.
Based off waiting and more waiting, and now it's actually here.
Yeah.
And Darth Maul looks like badass. And you had that commercial when they first revealed Darth Vader and he has the double-edged lightsaber. You're like...
Why did they give that away in the trailer, by the way? It just speaks to everything falling apart. Like no one had trust in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was one of the big reveals for that. It was probably the reveal.
Why would you reveal that in the trailer?
Yeah, like a dual light.
Why would you reveal that?
I will say.
What is the analog to that? Like, there has to be something. Like someone's track dropping or some shit. Like
it's like Jay's volume 3 leaking.
Right.
You know, like a year before it was supposed to.
But like it would have been like if Jay had like intentionally leaked it.
Right. Yeah.
Himself. Like let me just put this out. You know. Yeah. But it was. I mean. You know, I'm not an apologist, but it was kind of like a thing where we're expecting to see Darth Vader as a 10-year-old kid. He's a typical 10-year-old kid. You know, so on one hand, I get it. On the other hand, I'm like, yeah, this could have been done better, but whatever. I'm watching the new Star Wars. I'm happy with it. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, it goes off. You're like, all right, that wasn't really that good. Attack of the Clones didn't really bother me. I feel like the worst thing about all the prequels was really just his direction. And his direction specifically of Hayden Christensen.
Okay.
Because he's not
and the writing.
Yeah. The thing is, Hayden Christensen is not a terrible actor.
Okay.
He's not a great actor, but he's not terrible. But he was so wooden in these movies, and Natalie Portman, who we know is a good actress,
right?
So wooden, and both their chemistry together just made more wood.
Mm-hmm.
They built a house.
Wait, not good wood.
No.
Okay.
But I will say,
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Listen, I'll just say one thing. One of the redeeming qualities or redeeming moments of that whole prequel arc. When Yoda comes out with the lightsaber for the first time. that entire theater lost their minds. That was one thing they didn't put in the trailers, was Yoda coming out with his
in episode three.
In episode two.
Oh, in two.
When he fought Dooku.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody expected that at all.
I fell asleep in the first two movies in the theaters.
Like episode one and two.
I passed out.
Okay.
Like one, two, and three.
All right, so what I'm saying is episode two, towards the end, when Yoda fights Dooku.
Yeah.
And that's the first time you ever see Yoda even wield a lightsaber.
Right.
And he does all that jumping around and whatnot.
Yeah.
That was probably the loudest ruckus I've ever heard in a movie theater. And it was not a hood movie theater.
But then they fuck it up in episode three where he fights Palpatine.
Yeah.
And like they OD'd on it. Like George Lucas should not be writing and directing shit ever. And like James Cameron does, he like insists on like getting in his own way all the time.
Yeah. Okay. So didn't somebody like edit all the movies together into some sort of like cohesive?
Yeah, there is something on YouTube. I've never seen
cutting all the fat
it's like
out.
Like an hour 45-minute cut.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be more coherent, but I'm just like, why?
Okay. Of all the prequels or something.
Of
like
all
that.
The prequels.
But yeah. You guys own...
I've never seen it.
No, but you guys own all six of the movies.
Yeah.
Okay, and you watch like all of them regularly?
I hate that I have the first three, but I'm like, again, a completionist, so it's
Yeah.
I don't watch them regularly. If I'm scrolling through the channels and they're on, I might watch them.
Okay.
I probably watch them like once a year, once every other year. But like I said, if you're scrolling through like on Spike TV once a year or whatever, it's like there's always at least one station that shows all of them back to back. One time a year. So if I happen to be in front of a TV and they're on, I'll watch it.
Also, there was a thing where not only was he intent on like fucking up his legacy by ruining the prequels, he went ahead and like there's a scene at the end of episode six where they're celebrating.
Dude, I was literally just about to talk about
right,
this.
Right?
He takes out Yub Nub.
I can't even watch.
And he puts in this like, it's like one of the best musical moments in Star Wars history.
Period. I have to turn it off like 10 minutes before the movie ends.
It's the Ewok celebration.
Okay.
Where, you know, the Rebels win, Death Star blows up, they go back to Endor, it's a big party, and it's this awesome, very celebratory, but it's happy, but it's cool. I'm not really a fan of happy music. It's very happy, but it's hard. It's the Ewok celebration song, and it's in their language. It's called Yub Nub.
Spoiler alert.
And then in the special edition, and the other musical moment... in episode three, Size Noodles and the Max Rebo Band.
Yes,
they perform at Jabba's palace. He took both of those core musical moments of the movie and totally replaced them with like, pardon my French, for lack of a better term, just bullshit. And especially Yub Nub at the end, what he replaces it with is like the most light in the ass. It doesn't feel like
horrible.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely it's fucking terrible. Horrible. Actually, that's the one reason why I don't watch Return of the Jedi, is because I don't want to get to the end and want to hear Yub Nub, and I have to hear this bullshit.
Well, the fucking Jabba's Palace scene too was like this. Everyone suddenly had this huge boner for like forcing CG into like the remakes of the remasters, and like they made a big deal about how they inserted CG into the thing, and I'm like, this is one of
But it made it terrible. Like Size Noodles, you see her lips are like all of a sudden zooming into the camera.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
Like, and what was her original song was called Latin Neck. I know this because I went and found the 12 inches of both of these records. So
I also learned how to play that on sax.
Wow.
Yo. Well, that's a trumpet, but whatever.
Yo, someone get
S. Well, Dizzy Gillespie played the sax.
Someone get SOHH on the phone.
But yeah, no, so those. But here's it's the cool thing when you guys never seen the movies, but especially in terms of Latin Neck, the song from Jabba's Palace. It was actually very much a modern song. When I say modern, I mean like what was happening on the radio at that point.
Right, okay.
It was like a modern funk record.
Mm-hmm.
Modern funk or boogie record. So it was like something you might almost turn on 98.7 back in 1983.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You would hear something that sounded like this. It just happened to be the alien singing in a different language. But musically, it had a groove to it.
Yeah.
And then they turned around and they replaced it with like some Tina Turner sounding
B-side, C-side shit that never made it out of the studio.
Yeah,
someone
was
found
really
something.
Bad.
But they were playing Tina Turner on the radio in 1983. So.
But it wasn't that Tina Turner. It was like a Tina Turner tribute band. It was like somebody doing.
It was the iCats.
Was it Rolling on the River or whatever?
Yeah.
Picture that being done by a really bad tribute band with no soul. and that's what they put in replacement.
With like CG aliens, like most unnecessary expenditure of anything.
So bad.
Okay, how do you guys rank the first six?
Oh, you mean all six?
Yeah.
Well, there's a seventh on the way, so I see what you mean. But yeah,
I mean, well, where do you put the seventh? Empire is at the top of the mountain, no matter how you cut it.
Yeah,
I think we can agree on that.
Yes, and I think anybody who doesn't agree on that is out of their mind.
Yeah,
Eric, what do you think?
I would say two. I'd probably go for three, then one, only because for me, three episodes or episode six rather came out at the perfect age for me. Like I was like,
so you're saying Empire, five, then six, Jedi, and then four. New Hope.
I think one of the coolest moments for me in Jedi is actually like Darth Vader takes his mask off.
Yeah,
you know, so that alone, and then the speeder bike battle through the forest is amazing. That final lightsaber fight between Luke and Vader, we actually see them get busy.
Yes,
almost on equal footing.
Force lightning.
Yeah, you see Force lightning for the first time. You really see how much of a badass the Emperor actually is. So for me, it's Empire, then Jedi, then...
Another thing George Lucas decided to ruin in the prequels.
What's that?
When he has Palpatine and Mace Windu.
Oh, right. And he's...
I'm like, Sam Jackson isn't going out like that.
Right, yeah. And like
that doesn't
he's
happen.
Like, I must destroy the Sith. And he's holding the lightsaber, and then Anakin just jumps in. That's one. Hold on. One other thing. Anakin just turned so fast. It was like, I can't let this happen. I can't let this happen. I'm going to do it anyway.
I can't even tell you. I passed out.
I serve you now.
Yeah, I passed out, and I'm like, I couldn't have been sleeping for more than 20. And like suddenly the whole, I missed the whole arc.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it in the theater. They spend like zero time on it.
It's a quick change.
So you say.
This guy went from being the savior of the universe, the chosen one. To becoming like the ultimate bad guy within a span of like 40 seconds.
I guess the point is he was mad the whole time.
Did you guys see that like a bunch of people have named their kid Anakin?
Yeah,
like it's like that, one. Like, yeah,
it's depressing.
So do they know that the kid is evil?
Ultimately, I guess he wasn't.
Yeah, it's a redemption story.
It's the first six
movies, as Eric said.
It's
a redemption story.
Or the fall and rise.
Yeah.
Okay, so George Lucas, if he didn't direct everything, he wrote. And was behind all of the first six movies, right? Now,
so his most direct involvement was in 1, 2, and 3. That's where he was like, "I'm putting pen to paper," and also getting behind.
Well, homie told him what us was. Harrison Ford was like, "Yo, George, you can write this shit, but you can't say it." Like we're talking about how bad his writing was even back then.
Really,
but that's part of one of the reasons why a lot of the acting in general in the first three is a lot better.
It's so
because it's improvised by actors who know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah,
right.
You know, like the infamous "I know" line. Yeah. I love you. I know. Like,
and it's a product of not overthinking it.
Right.
It's just like, again, like dealing with what you have available. And then as soon as you know, George Lucas like makes the money off those trilogies, like you can't go back and capture that magic again.
Mm-mm. It's but to also the point you where you can't like challenge him in the same way.
Yeah. You can't challenge yourself.
Right.
It gets to the point in the prequel trilogy where he. I don't know what the fuck happened, but he like pulls an M. Night Shyamalan and starts like inserting himself into the film. I don't know if he's in there.
Is he?
In 1, 2, and 3?
Makeup, like in the Galactic Senate.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about this. I didn't catch it in the movies, but I read about it.
But also, there's like a lot of people in those films who like just low-key you don't know about.
Like E.T. is in...
Not only, but like
episode 2.
Natalie Portman's whole entourage is like Keira Knightley, Rose Byrne, Sofia Coppola.
Yeah.
And like they're the only people who came out of that franchise unscathed because they had nothing to do,
pretty much, except stand there.
So okay, so George Lucas is not involved in this new one that's coming out.
That's all J.J. Abrams.
Okay, right.
He's handed over the reins and like
completely.
You know, he put that like World War II like what was
the
that?
1941.
No, he put out the movie about the airmen. Tuskegee Airmen.
Oh yeah.
He did an interview about Star Wars Zen, like what his involvement was going to be going forward, and he was just like, the guy was so befuddled by like the hatred. And like the vitriol of fans, that he was just like, I have to step away because I clearly like I just don't understand. So that's why it was dormant for a little bit until Disney went ahead and bought it.
Yeah, right. But apparently he had a draft of part of the deal was they were going to make the movies according to his guidelines that he was giving them, and then at some point it became clear that wasn't going to work for JJ, and they scrapped everything pretty much that George had laid out for them.
Okay, so before any trailer comes out, where is your mind in terms of a J.J. Abrams project in this world?
Yeah. I mean, J.J.'s a good director, so it's like...
And he's a fan.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
But not like a dysfunctional fan.
Right. If you're somebody who just genuinely loves the movies and all the things that made them great...
Yeah,
right.
You always feel like a movie's going to be in better hands. Like, Star Trek... I liked the Star Trek reboots, but he even said himself, I was a Star Wars kid. I wasn't a Star Trek kid. But he made, still made, you know, I like the new Star Trek. or the first one. The second one was all right, but the first one was really good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if he can do this with something that he's like,
that he doesn't like love, like, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Imagine what he can do with a franchise that he actually loves, yeah. And yeah. Has the unlimited budget to do so. And he expressed early on, like, I don't want to do CGI. I want to do practical effects.
He's a fan who had like a, you know, like probably had like a normal social life growing up. So like right. He understands like the implications of Star Wars outside of like core nerddom.
Right. Like mm-hmm. Just on society in general.
Right. Which is super important.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you guys have seen Lost.
Yeah.
Never.
I have.
I've never seen it.
I never saw
it. I didn't follow the whole show, to be honest. Like, mm-hmm. I just, when you have showrunners coming out on TV and being like, we don't know where we're going with this, I'm like, then how the fuck are, like.
That gives me a lot of faith as a viewer.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, why the fuck, so the polar bear's not going to pay off?
But, like, George Lucas, in the same way, like, he said that he had it all mapped out, but, like, it wasn't fully mapped out.
No, it wasn't. He had the general arc and kind of fill in the blanks.
Right.
Of that.
But what is the question?
I don't know.
But you know, actually, a lot of that, like, I never watched Lost. I kind of didn't have to.
You're just trying to, like, out me on, like, every single thing that I've watched.
He's not really a nerd! Yeah. But, like, my assistant, he never watched Lost. And then he ended up binge watching it right after it finished. He binge watched the whole thing. So I kind of knew everything that happened. And I really attribute, like, who I don't like, I'm not a Damon Lindelof fan.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So as long as Lindelof has nothing to do with Star Wars, I'm good.
Okay, so then the trailer does come out. The teaser trailer cried. First, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when they said, Chewie, I'm home, like, well, that was
no,
the second
even
trailer.
Before that.
The first trailer, to be honest, there was a fake trailer that came out the first.
Yes.
At the same day as the real one.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I was kind of, the production value, I think, on the fake trailer was so good. That when I got the first trailer, which was more like a teaser, I was kind of like, that's it. I almost thought it was fake. First of all, there's a black guy in a stormtrooper outfit
right.
in mm-hmm. the desert. I'm like, this has got to be the
which
trailer.
Is the first shot.
Right.
Yeah,
so I'm
right.
like, this probably isn't even real. Yeah. But then I got over that, and I liked it. I genuinely liked it. But it really didn't hit me until the actual first real trailer.
Which is the one with the
which is the one where
no, Chewie please explain. Her. Please explain.
Yeah,
the cross guard.
Please explain.
Lightsaber, but like also ones coming out like left and right.
Yeah,
like
crossbar.
The cross guard
seemingly would like you know cut himself if he. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, any lightsaber is really gonna cut you. But I know what you mean. There was that whole big debate about how that could work in real life, and I'm like, dude, we're talking about laser swords.
I just don't understand. Like critics who get up their own ass about like the real life applications of lightsabers. And,
right.
Like,
I'm like, dude, it's a laser sword.
Ion thrust engines. I'm like.
Well, think about what you're saying right now.
Well, Luke got his arm cut, right? His yes. hand like flew off.
Oh, wow,
whole,
okay.
Yeah, he chopped the whole thing off.
He didn't bleed to death.
No, it's cauterized. It sears the wound.
it was cauterized instantly.
Is that a real thing or is that just like
is that
in
a
the
Star
world?
Wars thing?
Yeah.
No, dude, it's an energy based. It's like
no cauterized.
cauterized, however you pronounce it.
I have no idea that it is.
It's like when you cauterize a wound, like when you just like set.
When
like
you take
it.
Like a hot, like,
oh,
you take like a hot
oh, really?
Piece of metal to the wound
to
and
the
like.
Wound.
Gotcha. So it is
oh,
a real word. Okay. Yeah,
oh, I didn't even know that.
See,
yeah.
So that's pretty much what happened when he lost his hand. Just cauterized it instantly.
Yeah.
It like flash seared it. Like what yeah. Jeff likes to do with salmon.
Yes. You do with salmon? You
I don't.
Yeah. How'd you cook your sea bass for gunplay?
What did we do? We.
Honestly, it was like salt and pepper and olive oil, and we had some parsley on it. But like, we just let it rock in the oven on like broil, maybe right?
Yeah,
I think
so.
It broiled
his wound.
But by the way, when Gunplay walked in, he was like, "What's that smell?" And then he saw it. He was like, "Oh, this is the best!" And then
it was my birthday, and I wasn't eating my sea bass quickly enough because it's a podcast, and I'm trying to eat and talk.
Right.
And so then he. Lunged across the table and ate half of mine.
That sounds like Gunplay.
It was pretty amazing, yeah.
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 See, Gunplay was a great guest because he has no inhibitions.
Yeah.
He understands his personal brand very well.
Yes. Oh, he does.
Like it should Gunplay. Be said that, so, yeah. You know, because this is it's a dinner party.
It's a food podcast.
Yeah,
sure.
So we were going to get you guys Dippin' Dots.
Because right. It's the ice cream of the future.
But then they didn't have it around
But
us.
Star Wars actually takes place in the past.
Really?
A long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Galaxy
yeah,
far, far away.
Yeah, that would make sense. It just seems like space
just bought
is
us
always
like a
the future.
Husk of meat on open fire, rotating it.
Yeah.
Have you obviously you've seen the artwork for what is theoretically going to be its own amusement park down at Disney World?
Yeah,
Star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's
Star
two.
Wars based.
As Bob that Iger just came out and announced.
Yeah, yeah. There's going to be
two
one
parks.
Like, yeah, because there's one in like
LA and one in
LA and one in Florida. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been to Disney World recently?
Yes, I have actually.
And is this going to bring you back?
Disney World or Disneyland?
I've been, well, I've been to Florida, so I've been to Disney World.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Disneyland ever.
Okay.
I've only been to Disney World. I mean, I'm definitely going to go check that out.
Okay. Just
the scope of the plans, of what they're talking about putting together,
yeah,
it's going to be crazy. You know, if they were smart, they really need to do like the speeder bike.
Oh yeah,
simulator.
Yeah,
they do that zipping through. No, but if they did that, you're zipping through Endor
all day.
I'd ride that literally the entire
all day. I wouldn't leave.
Fine with that.
I wouldn't leave.
I almost
Jay's next birthday present to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my god.
You know, I almost bought a triathlon bike recently. You know, they ride in this position. On
triathlon bike.
Because it looked like a speeder.
Dude, you should do that. Put it on one of the stationary mounts and then do like three screens and just do Endor.
All right, so just to wrap up the Star Wars portion of this.
There's portions?
Have we... yeah.
There's more?
Have we missed out totally by not seeing any of these Star Wars? And if we went and saw Episode 7 or whatever it is, the new one, can we just pick up right
then? I think you guys would probably know enough about... It's become like the lore of that universe has become part of just everything. Yeah,
like I am your father. You're familiar.
Yeah, everybody knows that. That's what I'm saying. So it gets to a certain point where I think you could just watch it and not have to go back and watch the other ones.
Okay.
What I will feel like you've probably missed out on is more so from a social aspect, more so than the story. I'm sure you guys know the story.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's like, you know, cigarettes, like, you know, us not standing outside of bars. Like, you make friends easily that way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cho would have yelled at you for that one.
You know, but it's like, you know.
Shout out Cho.
Yeah.
Aside from like the obvious line, it's like, I am your father.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of other ones where somebody can say like, yeah, that's not what you're looking for. That's not the such and such you're looking for. And 90% of, I would say 90, a very good amount of people will know that you're referring to Obi-Wan's line from A New Hope. But you guys, that would totally, the irony of it or the joke of it would totally be lost on you guys.
But, right. Well, how about this, though? We love and have seen Spaceballs
like a million times.
A million times.
Schwartz is bigger than mine.
Yeah, right, yeah. But like, we can still appreciate that and, like, get all the jokes from that.
You'll get the Spaceballs jokes because you've seen Spaceballs. But I think the Star Wars jokes, they're not necessarily jokes. They're just pop culture references that become part
of the game. Star Wars is not a comedy.
Lord of mercy. Depends on who you ask.
This is like, in the event that you guys ever do a show,
mm-hmm.
This is like if a show that you guys did came out on like network TV, for instance.
Okay.
Me being like, well, you know, I listen to the podcast, so really, what is the point of
the point of the show?
Yeah.
I know the podcast.
Why am I watching these jabrons for a full 20 minutes?
Like, I used to see those guys on the street. I don't need to actually watch their show. I've seen them.
I used to live next door to them. I have all the reference I need.
Is there any movie that you guys, like, everybody's seen but you guys have not?
Yeah, I have a couple of those. I had never seen The Princess Bride until about 6 years ago.
Wow.
Eric, you have no room to stand on.
Yeah, yeah, you have nothing to stand on.
No. Of all movies, I'm surprised that Just hasn't seen that.
I saw it was about 5 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
I finally saw, from beginning to end, I'd always seen it in pieces. I finally saw all of True Lies for the first time this past week.
Okay.
Oh, damn.
Okay.
I don't know what mine would be. I watch a lot of movies.
Sure.
Like, granted, I've seen a ton of movies that probably most people haven't seen.
Yeah,
right.
Because I'm easily entertained.
No, don't back down.
I'll watch almost anything.
Okay.
Like, a movie has got to be really bad, and I'll probably still watch. I saw one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And I'm like I said, I have, when it comes to that, I'm like a 10-year-old. I can watch anything.
Really?
But I watched this movie called The River Murders.
No idea.
Was it straight to VHS?
I don't think so. I think it was in the movies, but it's probably just in and out. And I can't remember it off the top of my head now, but it had, like, known actors in it, like decent actors,
but just
Hayden Christensen.
The acting was worse than Hayden in Star Wars. It was really, really, really bad. Like, and it's an actor that you know,
mm-hmm.
who's done good work in other movies, and you're sitting there watching them like, what is wrong with you? It was one of the first times that I was like, I'm not entertained.
Oh, I didn't watch the third Godfather movie until like 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the second one's supposed to be the best one, right?
Yeah, the second one's the best one.
I've only seen two. I've never seen one or three.
Really?
Huh.
Never seen Goodfellas.
Whoa.
Really?
Never seen it. Bits and Pieces.
Yeah, sure.
The whole thing.
We should have you guys back, and we can talk about Goodfellas and,
that works.
And Godfather.
Have you? What were the movies that would play, or was it? Would it just be like TV, like in baseline, when people would be like in the studio?
A lot of times it was just random TV. If it was after 1 a.m., then it would be porn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't me, but there was an associate of ours at Baseline that every night at 1 a.m., the the porn would come on. It wouldn't be like Skinemax. Somehow, I think our cable was hacked. But we had like all channels.
Yeah.
So every night at 1 a.m. the porn would come on.
And that all was just, Star Wars themed, though.
Yeah.
And, there weren't really like movies. And then in the front, we have like, the hacked satellite TV.
Yeah.
But there was never any like one particular kind of thing that was always on at Baseline. Okay. It was just whatever was on.
Sure.
Except for late at night, there was a stretch for about a year or two where it was just every night.
But no one's bringing like DVDs or anything to watch specifically.
Google used to watch a lot of Star Trek.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're Star Wars.
Yeah,
Guru's a Trek. Yeah. You guys can do a whole episode. You can do a whole
like Next
episode.
Generation or Deep Space Nine or.
I think he was in all of them. Actually, I think he just loved the lore of it himself. But I know like one of my Christmas presents for him,
like through Voyager.
Yeah, like, one of my Christmas presents for him one year was like the entire run of Next Generation.
Holy
like,
shit.
Like all the DVDs, plus with a couple of lost episodes, it was like a huge box set like this that I got for Christmas.
Wait, so do you, as a Star Wars fan, look at him and be like, "You're a nerd"?
No, but we used to have that argument. It's funny because I was talking about this on Twitter today. I guess they're doing a Star Wars versus Star Trek debate in Brooklyn, like on stage with a bunch of people. Like,
that sounds like the annoying Kanye thing you guys went to.
Yeah, we went to like a
we love Kanye, right. Like.
We went to like a, basically what amounts to like a TED talk about Kanye.
It was, but it
about
was
about him.
Yeah,
and
his influence.
Everyone
and,
was liquored up, so it was just like.
But he wasn't there.
No.
That's
this was weird. It was the worst.
That's strange.
It was the worst. Like,
oh, see, this is where if I was a popular person, if I was a famous person, me saying annoying Kanye thing would have been the rip quote.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like he says he went to an annoying Kanye thing. That's the headline.
Right. Yeah.
But that is strange. He wasn't even there.
This is exactly why I'm not famous, by the way. I can't deal with the pressure.
That's it. Yeah, no, it was a sold out event with all these people just espousing
in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
White-splaining. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
People read poetry apparently.
Yeah.
It was slideshows.
What?
Yeah,
like PowerPoints
about PowerPoint like what it's like to live in Chicago and like all it was
so just basically explaining or white splaining like you said.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
it was.
Interesting.
It was
and by the way, it was like 4 hours.
What a time to be alive!
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was, but anyways,
but
they're doing
Eric
this
and
debate.
I are completists, and so we had to go.
so they're doing this debate about Star Wars versus Star Trek, and somebody randomly threw me into the conversation and says, "You can't do this without Joss." And I'm like, dude, I've already done this with Guru a zillion times. I am debated out. You know, like I said, my dad was a Trekkie. I get it. It's two different approaches. Like I would say whereas Star Trek is maybe more science, Star Wars is almost like more like religion. It's just the polar opposite.
Wow.
Yeah, for me, it's just like a given. It's such like it's a thing that's pervaded so many aspects of my life that is, or like informed like why I like things that it's not even like a, I don't even think about it as like a, is there like a choice or a separation between the two? It's just like Star Wars is one thing and like Star Trek is a show that existed.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't think it's a coincidence. How many years ago was this? Where it was like that. When the last time the UK did their census, like there was like an insane amount of people who identified their religion as Jedi. Like when they would check other,
right,
and then brought in Jedi, and it wasn't a concentrated effort or orchestrated effort. It was just that's what people decided to do,
right.
And I think it just speaks upon like if you just look upon or look at the movie from the standpoint of like how to live your life and just the concept of karma and do unto others and just all that kind of stuff that the overarching themes of all religions basically. I kind of feel like Star Wars is on that side, and Star Trek is a bit more on the ones and zeros. Like, Star Wars just says, this is a lightsaber, and this is what you can do with it. Star Trek is more so, this is how that lightsaber works. Okay. Star Wars doesn't care to explain how it works. It just does. It's
right.
Part of the lore. Star Trek is more interested in how that lightsaber actually works. That makes sense.
I kind of feel like we're on the road to naming George Lucas God.
No,
we've already said that God has problems then.
Yeah, that would be a very flawed.
I'm very excited for what J.J. Abrams is going to do.
Okay.
It's actually like revitalized a very dormant part of my life.
Well, really? I love the episode that he did of The Office, and so I feel like I can get on board with this. Yeah.
Bad robot in the building.
Yeah. Well, all right. So maybe. Maybe we'll see it.
I mean, probably not. Yeah, no.
Anyway, we really appreciate you guys coming through.
I'm going to force you guys to come.
Mm-hmm.
like we're gonna have to go watch it. Like we have a plan to book out the whole theater.
Wow.
For episode 7?
For episode
7. I almost did that with episode 3.
I feel like financially you could pull that off a little easier than
we could combine our efforts.
Maybe. I'm down.
I'm serious.
And not invite these dudes.
Okay. And you guys can wait outside.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll just give you guys the bootleg.
It'd be the Seinfeld episode.
Yeah.
Phil, we really appreciate you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thanks, dudes.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.